नमस्ते, गुड मॉर्निंग एवरीवन। टुडे आई वुड लाइक टू ब्रीफली टच अपॉन सर्टेन एस्पेक्ट्स ऑफ द स्पिरिचुअल जर्नी व्हिच वी डिस्कस्ड एट आवर रिसेंटली कंक्लूडेड धर्मशाला रिट्रीट। एंड on which there is perhaps some confusion which could be cleared up. Firstly, I would like to touch upon the terms sannidhi and sharanagati. Sannidhi means being in the presence of, being in the presence of. And Sharanagati means surrender or taking refuge. Now, these are very relevant, especially in this era where we have long distance communication like never before. For example, this Zoom session. In the earlier spiritual traditions of India, especially, that's what I'd like to talk about. Not only did we have the Gurukul system, where students were living with the guru in the same accommodation, community, forest dwelling, and learning from the guru. But traditionally, when we go back to the last century or so, in terms of spiritual gurus, whether it is Ramakrishna Paramhans, Anand Mahima, Shirdi Sai Baba, Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta Maharaj, and so on, we had people who would literally move to the town where the guru was residing, and those who could not move would visit as and when they could. Because there was no option of long distance communication, except letter writing, perhaps. Now, there are two aspects here for being in the presence of and surrender. You see, in my own case, I had the good fortune of being in the same town as my guru, and we were not even 15 to 20 minutes apart by car. So going regularly was easy. But that does not mean being in the presence of, that is at the level of form. Being in the presence of means whatever transpires in your life, pleasure or pain, incident after incident, what comes to mind immediately is the teaching, which basically means one has started living in the presence of the teaching. So something happens, maybe an incident which upsets you, something which shakes you a bit. And immediately the event is seen in the light of the teaching. Let's say earlier conditioning kicks in because it's hard to erase that overnight. Reactions are repeated, and yet this light shines that, hey, what just happened here? So when this constant referencing starts taking place in one's life, then one knows that sannidhi has happened. Being in the presence of the teaching has happened. If one has a guru figure and constantly through the events of the day, challenges in life, the guru's form comes, although one is not living next to the guru physically, sannidhi has happened. What would the guru say? How would they react? So these are important pointers to know how close we are to the teaching which has appealed to us. It reveals itself this way. Now, surrender or taking refuge is not a mental concept. One cannot say, I surrender to so and so or I surrender to the teaching. This must be clarified. The question itself is a tricky one. For example, if someone asks you, have you surrendered to your guru? Have you surrendered to this teaching? And you say, yes, I have surrendered. I have decided to surrender. This surrender, true surrender, means this ego, which thinks it has surrendered, has vanquished its position. For example, you're a thief, and without you knowing it, while you're going about your burglary, a cop is standing behind you. You don't know that. And suddenly he says, hands up, and you freeze. There is no choice. So you don't turn around and tell the cop, I decided to surrender. You see? When it is so clear that something has hit home deep in the heart, surrender has already happened. It does not need the mind to say, I have surrendered or I have decided to surrender. That is why one of the simplest definitions of the word understanding, which I liked, was when the American mystic Lester Levinson said, understanding means standing under. Understanding means standing under. Under the umbrella of the teaching, taking refuge. Maharaj said, understanding is all. Rameshji would keep pointing out this simple three-word statement, understanding is all, full stop, which Maharaj used to say. Now, that didn't refer to the mental understanding. That referred to the total understanding. The total understanding, thy will be done. Nobody is the doer of their actions. A total acceptance of what is become one's mantra in daily living. Life is lived by these Mahavakyas, by these statements. Then one knows surrender has happened. Then there's this confusion on, can I have two gurus, which repeatedly comes up. Now, this is specifically in the Indian context. In the Western context, let's say we are interested in non-duality or any spiritual path, and we come across books, we come across videos on YouTube, so be it, and we learn from so many of them. Different aspects, different expressions. So perhaps we have read three authors who have deeply influenced us, or seen three speakers on YouTube who have deeply influenced us. In this case, what is clear is that they are our guides or teachers, you could say, teaching us things which we were not aware of. So one can have many teachers, one can have many guides, and so on and so forth. Why not? Everything is adding a new dimension to my thought process. But can one have many gurus? That cannot happen unless one has different gurus at different times. You see, the guru is not just a teacher amongst many. The guru is consciousness. The guru is the self, a representative of the self, the one self, not the two selves. It is one's own higher self reflected back to oneself. So, in that sense, one cannot have two gurus. So the Sufi mystic Bhai Sahib was quite right that you cannot ride two horses at the same time. Now, this word guru may be irrelevant for someone who's not looking for a guru, someone in the West who does not really care about the guru concept. It does not mean that they're spiritual journey is in any way lacking. That's why I wanted to clarify. We are discussing this word in the Indian context. That if you feel you have a guru and you feel someone else is also your guru, then both are not your gurus. You see, this is a very important point. Because does that mean you have surrendered to two gurus? It begets the question. So, the ego actually is a tool of convenience. It fools itself very often. So, the one who is confused, who let's say aspires to have a guru or feels they have a guru, but they find that they have two gurus, they must clarify this within themselves, this confusion. And it's all right, it's part of the spiritual journey. It's a process of, you could say, filtration, assuring oneself, whatever it may be. So, for example, you think you have a guru, and someone tells you to write an essay or give a 10-minute speech about your spiritual journey, and you say, okay, I have two guides, two gurus. One is so and so, and one is so and so, then they are both your guides. Then it's actually become clear to you only that I don't consider either one as my guru. Yes, with time it can evolve. You follow a certain guru for a certain period of time, and thereafter you meet someone else. Or your destiny takes you elsewhere, and the final realization happens through that guru. Like in my guru's case, in Rameshji's case, he had a family guru for a very long time, years and years and years, and then finally he met Nisargadatta Maharaj, and he was clear that Maharaj was his guru. That can happen. So, these concepts of surrender, being in the proximity of, and guru, if we pay more attention to these, it will clarify where we are standing. I gave the example of this triangle and the three points of the triangle being love, trust, and surrender. Each word depends on the other two. Love, trust, and surrender. What does this mean? In the context of a guru, let's say, or even if the guru is life itself, It is not possible that you have love and trust, but there is no surrender. It is not possible that you have trust and surrender, but there is no love. It is not possible that you have surrender and love, but there is no trust. So we have to ask ourselves, if there is a guru or a teaching which has really struck us as being for us, that which is delivering us to Sukha Shanti, then is my relationship with the teaching or the guru one of love, trust, and surrender? Or is any one of these three components missing? If any one of these three components is missing, then it falls down like a pack of cards. Then the mind had just created a comfort zone in which it was navigating life's journey, but was not willing to take the leap. I mean, I know it's an extreme example, but in Autobiography of a Yogi, when the man reaches Mahavatar Babaji and his disciples after that arduous journey, and Babaji tells him to go jump off the cliff, and he just follows. And then he's resurrected by Babaji. Then one knows, yes. These are words I live by. This is where I take a refuge, Sharanagati. And this is my cushion through the trials and tribulations, the rough and tumble of daily living. So this love, trust, surrender becomes my holy trinity. If there's a yes, but, yes, but, yes, but, then that has not happened. Again, that is all right. But one has to be honest with oneself. Fortunately, in my case, I didn't have to grapple with any concepts put forth regarding the teaching. It was my life's experience. I didn't have to convince myself. I didn't have to go through this process which Rameshji would call of personal investigation. So it was natural for me. So these points I felt were important. I'd like to end on one quotation of Maharaj. Unless a guru is all love and self-giving, he cannot be called a guru. Only reality begets reality, not the false. Now, what does this mean? This love is not the opposite of hate. It is a total acceptance of the other, whoever presents themselves to the guru. A total acceptance of them the way they are. That love. And therefore, we find whether it is people who have been with a guru for a long time or someone new who steps in. The guru has a sense of an equal vision. Nobody is really near, nobody is far. Because this love is not a personhood-based love. What Osho rightly called the Buddha's love as a cold love. Because it's not sticky. It comes with no attachments. It is a sense of neutrality. Its nature is to give, not to take. Its nature is to be loving, not to be loved. So, in that sense, it is an unusual love. Unusual because it's not usual. You see? And the guru knows that consciousness is all there is, and the nature of consciousness is love. Consciousness is all there is, and the nature of consciousness is love. What we could refer to as transcendental love. You see, because as far as hate is considered, there has to be someone else to hate. Even if you hate yourself, means there are two. You hate yourself. And this love of the guru is not, does not mean that you'll only have flower petals pouring forth from his or her mouth. All gentle words, all of that, no. There have been gurus who have been known to abuse, like Shirdi Sai Baba, for example. That is their style. But at the heart of it is love, to transform, to make the disciple see things from a different perspective. I have a friend now who's in his mid-70s, and he was with Baba Muktananda of Ganeshpuri, and he was given the stick quite a few times. But he used to tell me openly, "I deserved it. There is no other way I would have listened. And I'm so grateful because that brought about the transformation." Transformed completely. So you see, we get stuck on the level of personality and have this kind of ideal which we build, most likely on very moralistic grounds. But there's none of that here because the motivation is just the other's well-being. Making the other see the unicity behind the multiplicity, the one behind the many. It is as simple as that. But we kind of guess, wonder, what is this person's motive? The doubt comes from us. We begin the relationship with doubt, are immersed in it with doubt. And therefore, most likely will end it in doubt. Guru and God are the same. Guru is the form representative of the source. So, to not trust the Guru is to not trust God. To not love the Guru is to not love God. To not surrender to the Guru is to not surrender to God. So, we have to be clear, where do we stand? The kingdom of God is within me, and where I stand is on holy ground. All right. If anyone would like to share something or ask a question, they are welcome to do so now. Yes, Meera.
Namaste. It's my pleasure to attend this again, and I wish there were more, but meetings like this. And the topic that you chose was just what has been on my mind. And the triangle, I have actually two questions. One is about the triangle that you're talking about. So if you could explain a little bit more about the surrender part, surrender to the guru, like how. It's like I understand that you don't surrender. Surrender happens. But How would you recognize that? And what exactly does that mean? And my second question is about when you say, like, the most troublemakers in your life, they are the reminders. And but sometimes you get so much caught that it becomes that the attention goes on their actions more and more, and the part of thinking that yes, we are one, it kind of gets dissolved. So how to handle that?
All right. Regarding the first question, supposing your guru gives you certain guidelines in daily living and you don't follow that because the ego is so conditioned that no matter what points or tips he has given you, he or she has given you, it does not come to mind and heart. You're still following your own patterns, let's say. And at the ego's convenience, the guru's teachings are being applied. Then one knows surrender has not happened. Whereas, if no matter what the situation, if one has received some insight, some inspiration, and some words from the guru, no matter how contrary it may appear, but one starts seeing it in light of the guru's wisdom. Then one knows surrender has happened. It is as simple as that. Does that help clarify this point?
Yes, very much. Yes, that's what sometimes, like, I'm very much affected with your teachings, and I like that's the I've listened to a lot of people on YouTube, but like as you have been explaining that your guru is the one where you find peace, and this is where I find my peace anytime. And most of the times I think in those terms, like, okay, this is the problem. What would you tell? Like, from
Yes.
your teaching, whatever you have been saying, and slowly it kind of evolves, and I get to the answer where I feel that, yes, that's what you would have said. And
Yes.
that's how I feel that maybe that is what it means to be the guru is the higher self of your consciousness or your being inside.
That's it. Now, secondly, supposing the guru says, nobody is the doer of their actions, like Krishna has told Arjuna. Now, something happens in your life, more so by a person who's closely connected to you, who has been someone you've not had a harmonious relationship with, by and large. And you've seen how you are troubled by this relationship, how you react, and so on and so forth. The guru's wisdom and inspiration is just pointing to one thing, that the other is not the doer. The other has been conditioned by a set of circumstances which make them say and do things which they are doing. So they are not really directing their words to you as an individual, even if it appears that way. They are just expressing themselves as per their blueprint. So one's own reactions to the other are one's own. They arise within us. So that is also seen. Now, when I see this, the resolution has already happened within me because I'm no longer condemning, hating, or blaming an individual for doing something to me. Earlier, that was my dialogue. Now I realize they can't help it. They can't help being who they are. And my reactions are appearing within me because it appears my buttons are being pushed. But the fact is, what is arising within my own consciousness. Now, what do I do? I am in a situation where I have seen this. Internally, it has been resolved. As far as my consciousness is concerned, there is no hate, blame, condemnation, nothing. But I may still need to decide. That how long can this go on for? Do I keep subjecting myself to being at the receiving end? Do I keep quiet or do I walk away? Or is there any potential to be in a discussion with this person to make them see things from my perspective? Now, all these options will come across anyone, and we have to do precisely that which we think we should do in a particular relationship dynamic. So the guru's words are being imbibed, looked at, but yet we have to decide which course of action to take. So this is how we live our life, relationship by relationship, issue by issue. By and large, when we see, by and large, we have harmonious relationships. You're not going to have a strike rate of 100 on 100 because we are living in the realm of duality. But even those who have upset me or hurt me, I have no ill will for them. In fact, I send them a silent blessing because they too are facing their own challenges in life, just like I am. Then I know I have come out of this grid, this love-hate grid. So as Levinson used to say, when I grant people their beingness, when I allow them to be precisely the way they are, then I'm out of it. Otherwise, I'm obsessed with wanting to change people, you see, which basically means I don't approve of God's creation and I have a better point of view of how people should be and how people should behave. So these are so closely linked, you see, because everyone becomes your guru in the sense everyone is your teacher. Especially those who are troubling you because they are making you look at aspects of yourself which are rising in your own consciousness. But thereafter, we have to decide how to navigate this journey of relationships. But with this standing under the umbrella of the teaching, everything changes color. Everything becomes more light than dark, you see, and we don't drag this burden of relationships behind us as we move ahead in life. That is what happens.
So when, like, when that understanding is there that nobody is the doer there, but your own conditioning that has happened, intellectually or like at the core of it, you have that understanding. But when you keep having that same, you're in the same loop that the other person, like, it keeps coming back to you. It is hard to, how do you get out of that that physiological reactions or that kind of it's not response, but words can express the response, but what your body is feeling, and sometimes like you feel that, oh, you are in a dark place, like you cannot, you understand that the other person is not the doer, but at the same time, you are not able to get out of it
Yes. So
at the physiological level.
even that feeling has to be surrendered. You see? Even that has to be surrendered. Because you are also operating on your past conditioning. Let's say of being the victim in this case. And we are also sometimes perpetuating our own identities. That is what the ego does because it feels safe when it has an identity. It is true, it takes two hands to clap. But like I said, if we have a choice, we don't have to force ourselves to be at the receiving end just to learn life's lessons. There's no point in that. If life has given us opportunities to avoid the situation while it is resolved in our consciousness, we may take that depending on our nature. Someone may be timid and shy and may rather not have a particular confrontation, but someone else may be quite okay to have it in the quest for learning. So there is no one size fits all. And this judging oneself is also not required, you see. Everything is just seen in the light of clarity. That is all. That is all this teaching offers. Not trying to force a particular relationship to work out, a situation to resolve, because it is not invested in the future. It is here and now, in this moment, the resolution which takes place in one's consciousness itself. Peace can only be found now, not tomorrow.
True.
Okay?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Anubhav.
Hey, Gautam,
Hi.
how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Tell me.
So I was visiting India, and I thought I'd meet you, but just wanted to dial in today and just see you talk. And I did send a few emails to you, but then I thought probably you've forgotten me, so I just wanted to make sure don't forget me.
You're not forgotten.
Life is good. Things are moving. The teaching has gone deeper, much deeper. One thing just I wanted to speak to you about, it's been on my mind for quite some time, is when an event happens, the teaching comes like in a fraction of a second, sometimes in the back of the mind, and it just comes and I don't even have to remind. It's very smooth for the past events which have already happened, like in the past, like there is acceptance of this had to happen, no problem. But there is some struggle for future events, like what will happen, that anxiety, that uncertainty. Though the understanding is there, but that understanding takes a little more time compared to the past event. So I thought, I know there is no magic formula, but do you have any comment on how to improvise for, I cannot improvise, but.
I mean, you see, look at it this way. It's quite an irony that as we move forward in life in terms of the number of years, and we have more past behind us than future in front of us, and we are still anxious of the dwindling future while the past is okay. You see how ironic that is? And so, if we feel this anxiety about the future, then love, trust, surrender have not happened. So simple. You see? Actually, past and future nullify each other because both, one is the dead past and the other is an imaginary future. Both are really equally deceptive and equally irrelevant as far as the present moment is concerned. So when we say that we've resolved the past, that's probably because we can't do anything about it, that it has been resolved, but we feel we can do something about the future, you see. But it's a grand deception, because what it implies is, whether it is the past or future, we are unable to be at peace in the present moment. So the present has got compromised by anxiety of the future, which basically and truly means the teaching has not gone to the heart. It is at an intellectual level. Because if it had gone to the heart refers to the heart of awareness. Right here, right now, in this eternal moment. It's as simple as that.
I sometimes do feel that, there is this little bit thing inside me which says, oh, maybe I can still do something about the future. And you just said those words. So I have to wait, but I'm on the path.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Abhishek.
Hello, Gautam. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. So there's a quote of Einstein which I came across yesterday. I think this fits in very well with the teaching. It says, everything is determined, the beginning as well as the end by forces over which we have no control. Human beings, vegetables, or cosmic dust, we all dance to a mysterious tune, intoned in the distance by an invisible piper.
That's beautiful. It fits in perfectly with this teaching, at least.
Yeah, I just wanted to share that because I think it fits very well. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, to have the humility to accept this, that is very important. Because,
Absolutely.
Thank you for sharing that quote.
And this teaching is really a question, you know, on heart surface. And thank you so much for this teaching, and Rameshji as well. Thanks to him as well.
Yeah, of course. Thanks to the entire lineage. I mean, I'm always eternally grateful to this lineage because it has kind of, for me, moved with the times and evolved itself. You see, the parampara was earlier even a kind of japa parampara. Then Siddharameshwar Maharaj stepped in and what is known as the bird's way was introduced by him and not the ant's way. So the teaching evolved. Then, of course, we had Nisargadatta Maharaj. Then we had Rameshji. There were other disciples of Maharaj also who were masters in their own right. And that is the beauty of parampara. As consciousness evolves, as understanding evolves, the lineage comes down again and again and again. And while the truth is the same, it may deliver it in different ways, you see. So I'm quite biased and eternally grateful to this system of lineage in the spiritual tradition. It is in other traditions as well, like in the Sufi tradition, there's the lineage. In our tradition, there's a lineage because it kind of has a certain solidity to it. And yes, one exception to the rule is, of course, the great Ramana Maharshi. But then you see, he considered Arunachala the mountain as his guru. That is the father of all paramparas because it's so ancient. So you don't really need the physical manifestation of form through the generations, eras, and all that, because that's a direct kind of transmission. So, yeah.
Right, absolutely.
Thank
And
you.
When he says life may not be easy but simple, so it's true. No,
yes,
it's simple.
It's
simple. We complicate it, but when the teaching arises at the moment, it becomes very simple. You know, all doubts disappear, and we don't have to, you know, go here and there. It just be, you know, we just be.
That is why Ramana Maharshi said, "The truth is simple, and that is the truth."
Absolutely. Hope to meet you soon, Gautam. Thank you.
Okay. I just have one request that for Zoom, I'd like to take calls of only people who are outside Mumbai. Those who are in Mumbai are welcome to come to the home satsang because that would only be fair. Yes, Rajiv.
Raja this side. Namaskar, Gautam ji.
Hi, sorry, yeah.
Good to meet you. For the first time, I'm attending this. I just had one question, and perhaps in context of what you shared today,
yeah,
about the Guru Parampara. Now, I'm fairly new to the spiritual journey, better late than never, I would say. But one question that keeps coming across my mind is how do I find my Guru? I mean, especially being outside India. I mean, although I am watching a lot of videos, I'm trying to read a lot of content, but this keeps coming. I'm not back home. So is it going to be something that I would spiritually connect to someone? So that's, you know, somewhere I read that it's not me who has to seek a guru, but in fact, the guru who is trying to seek me. But at what point of time, you know, so all these questions just keep coming. And how do I identify, besides, you know, when I apply those learnings and I find that, yes, I'm at peace, to various aspects, how would I know whether this is the right guru? Because you also mentioned something very important, that I cannot have two gurus at the same time. I may happen to have multiple gurus over a period of time, but not in parallel. That means there is a possibility that one may not be content with one, and may eventually, you know, sort of grow out of of one and find another. So just maybe I'm just putting too many questions here, but just, reflect upon this point for me. Thank
Well,
you.
Rajat, it's actually all your questions are the same. You know, they've been expressed in different ways. But as we spoke about this, yes, it is true that you don't find the guru finds you. But what that basically means is that you cannot analyze your way to finding a guru. It is a knowing. Someone may just see someone online or in person for the first time and say, this is my guru. Then intuition is operating there, you see. The thing is that Ramana Maharshi, in the traditional sense, when he was asked this question, how do I know whether Guru is my Guru? He would answer by the sense of peace you feel in his presence and the degree of reverence and respect you feel for him. These were his measures. My guru would add one more point, that if there is an absence of humility, then that person is not a guru. So these are actually quite tangible, these kind of questions we can ask ourselves. And more importantly, you see, we will know in our heart whether we are looking for a guru or not. We may not be, which is quite all right. We are happy to have multiple influences at the same time because they are all teaching us about life. So I would not really put any doership behind this quest to find a guru or be found by a guru. It is going to happen. You see, it is already predetermined. If you ask me, the Mahabharata war was already decided when Arjuna chose Krishna himself over Krishna's army. The rest was just a play of time. So I think if you just ask yourself that, am I quite content where I am? I'm learning every day, following many teachers, many teachings, so be it. Or if I ask myself out of 10, 15, 20, whatever it is, there's one out of these that really appeals to me. I really live by it. I really feel this has, I have a feeling of being home. Then I know that is the one. When there's absolute clarity, without me trying to convince myself or thinking too much about it, then I know, you see, home, why? Because the guru is the source. Then I know that I am connected to the source. It's so simple that this question will also not arise. How do I find a guru? Will the guru find me? It is a knowing. It happens. So I would not really think too much about this aspect. Does that help in any way?
Yes, Gautamji. Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care, Rajan. Yes, Gerald.
Hello, Gautam.
Hello. How are you doing? Sorry, I've lost you. Just a sec.
We okay now?
Yes.
Okay. I'm quite far from Mumbai, so I'm glad to be able to talk with you. I wanted to follow up, I think, a little bit on some of the questions that Rajat had posed, because it was very interesting to hear you talk about the difference between guides and a guru, and that somebody can have lots of guides. And I feel like I have lots of guides. I'm not sure that I have a guru. I was also glad to hear that you just said that you don't need a guru, or you don't feel like you have to have a guru. What I was wondering was, does a guru know when someone is their student?
That's a loaded question, and I would like to answer that in the negative by saying no. Because you see, the guru does not consider themselves a guru in any case. They have no sense of separation between them and others. That is why when my teacher was asked by someone, are you my guru? His answer was, it depends. Are you my disciple? If you are my disciple, then I am your guru. So I'm a bit wary of this because in the past I have heard of people who had gurus and then when they would go elsewhere to meet other gurus and the guru found out, they would admonish that person and say, I'm your guru. And they would, I know gurus who have called other gurus and told them, hey, this one is my student, please put your hands off him or her. So this is a very complex kind of situation, and I personally feel the guru does not care who is their disciple and who is not. Yet, there may be a recognition. For example, Ramakrishna was waiting for some of his disciples to arrive. That is a bit different. In that sense, yes, you could say, but in the sense which it is asked by and large, I would say no. Now, regarding the first part of what you shared, it is not everyone's destiny to have a guru. It is only some people who are destined to have a guru. It's not about really it being okay or not okay. What I meant to say was spiritual evolution will happen in any case. The minute one is on the path, when one is quite clear that the mundane world does not have much to offer beyond a point, that is one's spiritual journey. So it will unfold as per the divine blueprint. In that sense, it is not necessary that everyone has a guru. So, this was the attempt to clarify all these concepts about the guru. You see, it could be you don't have a guru up till now, you may have a guru at some point in the future. We don't know. But as long as we are clear that teacher, guide is a particular concept, guru is a particular concept. That is very important.
Well, I think what you said a few minutes ago about how if you know, if it feels right when you're in the presence of someone that is the guru-student relationship, you know, from my own experience, as I said, I feel like I have lots of guides. So when you said that tonight, it clarified for me, it crystallized for me, I think what my experience has been. But I must say that those experiences are impersonal. Right? They're through videos. And even with you, I watch your videos, I read your books, but it's not quite the same as like right now when I'm talking with you or when I hear you talking with us, even if I'm not interacting with you, I'm listening to you live, so to speak. That's the time I get that feeling from you in particular, that I don't get from other people that I've had those same sort of interactions with. So, I appreciate the description of the differences and the different nuances involved, and I think that's helping me develop an understanding of what I'm going through. And it feels rather nice.
Thank you, Gerald. You see, there are two ways to look at it. One is, can transmission happen, let's say, online? Certainly it can. For example, my mother has her Zoom meditations with her students, and she is very clear that transmission happens and some of them receive it. So there's no issue there. Yet, when we look at the traditional system, as I started this talk with, you see, it reminds me of a very beautiful pointer by Bhai Sahib, the Sufi mystic, when he was asked this question by his disciple, that is there any difference between only being online? Online in those days was letter writing, of course, where the disciple was very, very far from the guru. Or me being here in Kanpur with you right now. And he said, no difference in terms of the link, but in physical proximity, a certain transmission takes place. That was the pointer he gave. And that is why, even in our retreat, which concluded last week, I say to people, no matter whom they are following, that if you have the resources which allow you to go and physically meet the person you have been impacted by the most, then do so. Because it is of tremendous benefit based on my experience. It is, of course, an individual call, a personal call, But my own conditioning, my own relationship has been one of physical proximity. And so that is where I speak from, because, you know, as I said it in a lighter vein, that imagine in the days of Ramana Maharshi and Sai Baba and all these stalwarts, there was YouTube. And because we were so happy in our own homes with our computer screens that we were watching all their satsangs live and didn't feel the need to go there and be with them, what a tremendous loss in a way it would have been, you see. So I have this personal point of view that if you can, if life allows you, you have the wherewithal and you have to, there's someone who you'd like to meet, but they are far away, I don't think anyone would be the loser for meeting this being.
Well, I'd have to agree with you, but I'd also have to echo some of the things that were said earlier, which is, as I said myself, is this interaction with you, even though it's not in person, at least it's live.
Yes.
That's more to me than watching the videos of you or reading your books.
Sure.
So it's great to have more of these.
Yes. Thank you, Gerald. And I've read some of your mails. I've not had a chance to reply to them, but they're very engaging. So thank you for sending them.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Muskan.
Namaste, Hari Om, Gautamji.
Namaste.
Yeah, we met at Pune 2 years back. At present, I'm in Mumbai, but still, I just wanted some heart-to-heart interaction with you. So please, apologies for that first.
Okay.
I'll definitely come over and meet when we have satsang. Okay. So today, since this whole cherishing discussion around the guru is happening, I wanted your guidance. Like, for example, I have a calling and my heart, you know, resonates with teachings of multiple sages like Kabir, Guru Nanak, or Raman Maharishi. Even though I have not been in Tiruvannamalai, which I really wish to go very soon, but I have love for Arunachala. The moment I hear that chant, Arunachala Shiva, there is a kind of deep stillness and resonance, as if there is some subtle, you know, kind of coherence which I feel. Through you, I also have a lot of affinity for Siddharameshwar Maharaj. And of course, with the blessings of Sai Baba that I came to meet you. So now many of the gurus and the teachings which I resonate with, they are formless. And since all these teachings take us to the domain of oneness, a lot of teachers in form also show up, like you are showing up, and I feel so much peace when I interact. When I met physically first time, only once I've met you in Pune, there was so much of peace and stillness that we can feel even in the live satsang. My question is that, is it not that the teachings take the core of your, you know, that center stage of being a guru, and then the forms just blossom in that formless essence? Because you are one embodiment, there are two, three more guides which are showing up in that formless essence as guides, but they are all talking about one reality, about Advaita, about non-duality. And I'm madly in love with that teaching, I think so. So for me, then the form becomes subservient and the teaching becomes kind of. So I hope I'm able to clarify what is my question. Then in that relevance is, am I going haywire? Too much
no,
scattered?
Then life is your guru. Your building lift man is your guru. The dog barking on the street is your guru, because you're learning from all aspects of consciousness and creation. So I think what you're speaking about is quite different from what I had wanted to clarify at the start of the
ji, ji.
satsang.
जी
So that's something for you to look at, honestly, because then that would mean you've been delivered to the highest realization, because each person in your life who's troubled you or loves you, you have seen the hand of God above everyone. And so life has become your guru, and you have a sense of equanimity, peace, and deep contentment, no matter what the ups and downs in your life. And what Rameshji would refer to as deliverance has happened. So that only you would know, Muskan. Because you see, if you're resonating with all of them, but your daily living is still, you're still finding your way through the conflicts and the situations, then what you're speaking about is something very different. What you're speaking about is just that which resonates with you through different forms, but has not delivered you yourself to the realization of the self. So this, I think, you will need to clarify within yourself.
Yes. Yeah, that helps.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think, yes, we'll take one more. Yes, Suvarna.
Namaste.
Namaste.
I have a question. Like many people have taken book as a guru. Like Guru Granth Sahib, Bhagavad Gita, even Power of Now is guru for many of them.
Are you working on a Sunday? That looks
Yes,
like.
I'm working on Sunday.
Okay. Yes.
So can a book be a guru?
Could be. Guru Granth Sahib is a book.
Yes.
Now, the book by an author represents the author, you see, but the author's wisdom and teachings are in the book. So, if they are words you live by, most beautiful. Could be. Now, what happens if there are many books? I mean, you see, the thing is, we all have a favorite. I do. I have many books. Whenever I'm asked to recommend books, I have no shortage of books to recommend, depending on the temperament of the reader and their background, no doubt. But yes, you are quite right. Book. If we live by that book, the words in it, if we can live by I am that, let's say, or whatever, whosever book it is, then why not? But imagine that we live by the book but don't want to meet the author because we feel there's no need. That, I feel, would be a bit of a loss for us. If the author is around, of course.
Eckhart Tolle defines this as a live book, something called a live book. There are books which are live, means every time you read them, you get some different meaning out of it.
Yes, that's true. And I would place his books as one of those, certainly. I'm with you on that. But I
Yes.
had the good fortune of meeting him a few times in the early years between 1999 and 2004, especially. So I can tell you one thing. I didn't care much for his books at that time, but I loved being with him. Subsequently, The Power of Now, as you so rightly said, it opened up new dimensions of understanding. Even while my journey with my guru transpired, side by side, I got these kind of openings, you know, going along with his book. And I again stress the import of physical interaction if it is allowed. And of course, when the resources allow it, because I kind of concluded maybe 15 years after I met him the first time that that presence kind of touched me physically and stayed with me, maybe at a latent level, but really helped me on my onward spiritual journey with my guru. All right.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so we can just sit in silence for a minute or so if. I can see all of y'all who have their cameras off, well and good. If not, so be it. Thank you.